I am very happy to testify before any Congressional Oversight Committee. I have nothing to hide. I can explain and validate everything that I've done. So, you know, it's going to be inconvenient if they actually are out there essentially threatening to make my life miserable. But I'm going to do what I need to do, and that is cooperate fully, because we have nothing to hide at all.
Despite Joe Biden's last-minute preemptive pardon shielding him from past alleged crimes, Anthony Fauci still faced a high-stakes Senate grilling under a subpoena from Rand Paul, where any new falsehood under oath about gain-of-function funding, the Wuhan lab leak, alleged destroyed records, or the contradictions in his own newly released diaries could expose him to fresh perjury charges that the pardon does not cover.
You could not hide that your agency had funded the Wuhan research or your long history of defending gain-of-function research. The only alternative left was to argue that COVID-19 did not originate in the Wuhan lab. You were not a detached observer. You had an institutional interest in the public believing that federally funded research had nothing to do with the pandemic. It was a conflict of interest from the very beginning. The authors of the proximal origin of SARS-CoV-2 privately had serious doubts about a natural origin. Within days, though, they flipped. And they all wrote in Proximal Origin that the virus was almost certainly not a laboratory construct. That paper was then used by the government and the media and you to discredit Americans who were asking the same questions that you and the authors were asking yourselves privately.
Fauci's preemptive Biden pardon theoretically shields him from past criminal charges tied to his NIH work. He faced no genuine risk of self-incrimination and therefore had no valid Fifth Amendment privilege to refuse answering questions. Answers to questions millions of Americans demand. Any attempt to invoke it at the hearing could allow the committee to compel his testimony and pursue a contempt finding.
What was the Dan David Award? Do you remember, Doc?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
It was a $900,000 cash award. $900,000 cash award. And he got it because he used federal employees to get it. And this wasn't the only award, was it, Dr. Fauci? In fact, you applied for and received at least 8 other federal cash prizes on federal time using federal employees and federal resources. Here they are over my shoulder.
Under advice of his stable of high-priced attorneys, Fauci pleaded the Fifth 111 times to a variety of simple and inane questions, causing him to look incredibly desperate.
This testimony is from Anthony Fauci. This is not a game with his lawyers. He can advise. His lawyers can give him advice. He's got a half dozen here. They're all allowed to talk to him.
Yes.
All right?
Yeah.
But the attorneys are not recognized. In fact, the attorney was told not to sit at the table, and he's not obeying that recommendation. There's a row behind you, sir. That's where you were told to sit, and you're not. And now you're disrupting the proceedings. And so, look, this is the way Anthony Fauci wants to be remembered, for a lawyer not listening to the rules. That's the way you want to be remembered, and that's what you're going to do. You are not recognized, sir. Security, please remove him from the room. In the red folder on your table is a copy of Section 192 of Title II of the U.S. Code. Your counsel has been provided a copy as well. That section makes it a crime for a witness appearing under subpoena to refuse to answer any questions pertinent to the question under inquiry. Do you have that in front of you?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution.
Let the record record that the witness has refused to answer whether there's a folder in front of him based on his Fifth Amendment right.
What day of the week is it today?
On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bigley has launched an online pharmacy.
1776RX.health. It's one product we're launching with my decision, and that is ivermectin with benzidol, both powerful, really good anti-parasitics. It doesn't just get the big worms and all the crap that's out there. It's amoebas, it's microplasms. It is so important. These two together, I mean, ivermectin is a Nobel Prize winning for this, but benzidol is the big one. And folks, it isn't just parasites. Just search benzidol studies. Just put that into a search engine and you'll see congressional hearings. You'll see top scientists. You'll see all the studies on what else it does that they don't want you to know about. It's dramatic. So, and you won't know if you had any type of parasitical deal or whatever until you've done this. And a lot of people went there yesterday. A lot of people got it. Very smart move. 1776RX.health.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com. Annihilate.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live on Alex Jones Network, alexjoneslive.com. We, of course, have a lot of news to cover today. The big siege in Spain, absolutely jaw-dropping amounts of people crossing the Moroccan border into Spain on the heels of the amnesty granted to them by their socialist president. Maybe the most frustrating dichotomy that exists right now is that, is you either have, if you're in Western Europe or America, you got one of two options. You can be the conservative party, which means they do absolutely nothing for your people, but do serve Israel, or you can be on the side of the Muslim socialists or the socialists who open the door to the Muslims or whatever. And it's just yet another example of just the full-scale, all-out race war against white people that is happening across the world. And it's exhausting. It really is. And continuous. And easily solvable. So it's therefore on purpose from the people in power doing it. We'll show you those videos. I got so many of those. It's kind of ridiculous. I think I'm missing one of the pages of the videos as well. Oh, no. Here it is. I found it. We also have 100 IDF soldiers fleeing their base. This is a very interesting one. We can go to clip number two here. More than 100 IDF soldiers and commanders drop their weapon and basically stage a walkout protest in the middle of all of Israel's conflicts in the area. Let's go down to clip number two here. So there's the group chanting. And you know, it's one of those things. This actually happens, you know, kind of often when it comes to Israel. Like, there will be a big protest, and it'll be like, these people are protesting against the government and against the war. And you're like, aha, see, Israelis protesting the war, saying we shouldn't be at war, we shouldn't be killing all these Palestinians. And then you look into it, and it's like, well, actually, they're protesting their particular involvement. Actually, their entire life is sponsored by the Israeli government because they just sit around and read books all day as their livelihood. They're like, that's what we're supposed to do. We are the priest class. We do nothing but study the Torah, and we shouldn't have to go fight. Like, okay, so they're not actually against the war. They just are against themselves in the war. They want everybody else. It's kind of like that. It's kind of like that, where you see this, you go, okay, the IDF battalion, you know, dropping their weapons and walking out. I know their morale hasn't been very high. How could it be with all the humiliation that they've been confronted with over the last several years? Turns out it's a little bit different than that. Dozens of IDF soldiers desert SDE Taiman, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, Stay Taiman base after commander takes down banners in disciplinary action. Dozens of Givati Brigade soldiers walked off base after their commander took down what he said were signs depicting Satan and the Angel of Death, which he said glorified hazing of younger troops, while soldiers said some of them commemorated soldiers killed in Lebanon. So it's just, yeah, just one of those things. Just one of those things you hear about IDF soldiers. They're protesting. They're throwing down their weapons. They're refusing to fight. It's like, finally, finally, people with morals. Oh, my God. You know, finally, people are sick. They're just like, how many children can we kill? This can't go on. We have to stand up. Oh, no. No, actually, they're protesting the fact that their commander removed their Satan-worshipping sign. Oh, okay. Oh, so never mind then. Dozens of soldiers stationed at this base in southern Israel left the compound without authorization on Thursday in protest of a disciplinary action. According to the IDF, the deserting soldiers, members of the Givati Brigade, Zabar Battalion, were protesting their commander's decision to remove signs and drawings related to non-normative incidents that reflected the hierarchical divide between a veteran and younger troops. A soldier serving at the base said some of the removed signs commemorated troops who were killed when the battalion was deployed to Lebanon, a claim the battalion commander denied. The battalion commander sent a message to the soldiers' parents explaining the disciplinary actions. Those of you who remember the veteran soldiers' hazing of younger troops from your own military service know how serious these practices are and how many soldiers are harmed by humiliation and abuse they involve. It's like, you remember being in the army, right? Dear parents of the soldiers, you remember what it was like, right? You remember the abuse that you were subjected to, the psychological programming inflicted on you by trauma-based mind control. You remember that, right? You have fond memories of that, don't you? He added that he therefore decided to remove wooden signs depicting Satan, the Angel of Death, and other symbols that represent exactly those practices. The battalion commander rejected claims that items commemorating fallen soldiers had been destroyed, saying he had decided to remove the remaining banners, except a small number that I left in place because of their sentimental value. The man is clearly an anti-Semite. The man is clearly an anti-Semite who wants the destruction of all Jews. There's something about this that you got to appreciate. Or not, whatever, you know, just this is normal, I guess. Our greatest ally is just like, okay, IDF soldiers are protesting, you know, they're laying down their weapons, they're refusing to fight. It's like, oh my God, they are human. They grew a heart like the Grinch. This is amazing. And it's like, no, they're mad that the satanic altar they erected got torn down. It's like, what? And it's like, no, actually they say it wasn't a satanic altar. It was banners commemorating their fallen people. It's like, that's what, one of those is a lie. Somebody's lying about it. It's just kind of typical to be like, no, it wasn't us who were in trouble. We didn't do the bad thing. We didn't have unapproved, you know, satanic altars that we were worshiping at or anything. It's that guy just didn't want us to mourn our fallen comrades. Actually, he didn't want us to commemorate our fellow soldiers who had fallen in the battle. Just like, why would he do that? Why would that ever be a thing anybody did? That is not a good lie. You have to get better at lying. It's important to note that the signs have no connection whatsoever to the battalion's fallen soldiers or to any other memorial corners in the base, contrary to claims made by some media outlets. The battalion commander added that many of the soldiers had left their weapons behind, estimating they had acted under pressure. He said they were therefore willing to contain the disciplinary measures toward soldiers who returned to the base by 4 p.m. Anybody who chooses to return will be held accountable. The soldiers' actions were described as inconsistent with the Army's values and with what it expected of its troops. So there you go, folks. 100 IDF soldiers walk off the base, dropping their weapons in protest of their satanic altar being disassembled by the authorities there. So there's that. There's that going on. Meanwhile, in the Middle East, IRGC strikes Jordan again after 2-hour bombardment kills Iranian troops and civilians. But, you know, obviously the big story today, it's an invasion from AlexJonesLive.com. Footage shows thousands of male African migrants storm Spanish city of Ceuta. How do you pronounce that? Astonishing footage out of Spain captured the moment. Thousands of migrants from Africa flooded the small border enclave of Ceuta, something, prompting city leaders to ask the prime minister to declare an emergency. And we can go to, oh, you know, any of the 100 videos that we got from today, because apparently there were a lot of people there filming it. So the actual story here is that there is a piece of land across the Gibraltar Strait, the Gates of Hercules, that's owned by Spain. So there's a piece of Spanish territory on the African continent. It's a little chunk of land. And there's a recent decision in Spain that that little part of Spain, however you pronounce it, Ceuta, I don't know. But the decision was that if illegal immigrants came across, they could not be deported without due process. Sort of the same playbook they're running here in America, which is you cannot do anything to stop them from coming here. That you cannot have a border wall. You cannot have guards on the border. You have to let them come here. Once you do, you cannot extricate them. You cannot get them out. You have to give them due process, whatever that means. And what that actually means is you now have to pay for their lawyer. You now have to provide them a place to stay while it goes through the court system. And how long do you think it would be to process, you know, 500,000 people at once? And so you just wonder, how long is Europe going to take this? Now, Spain, you know, the Spanish in some part are actually fighting back. There's video of people like attacking the migrants in the streets and, you know, Spanish men basically going down to the border to defend it themselves. But legally, you know, this is just the sort of overt bombshell imagery of what's going on. But this is not even where the vast majority of the Spanish migrants are coming from. I mean, they're coming from small boats. There is, you know, one of the outcomes of this is that Italy is talking about kicking Spain out of the Schengen, or whatever they say, zone. So within the EU, the Schengen nations basically agree that you don't have to have a passport to travel between them, which is what allows migrants to enter into the EU however they can through Greece or through Italy, and then make their way all the way to France, where they get on a small boat and go to England, or make their way up to the Netherlands or Germany, places that have obviously more profitable welfare arrangements with their migrants. And so they're talking about kicking Spain out of that, basically to keep this contained to Spain. The solution, of course, is 2 to 3 tripod-mounted 50-caliber machine guns, but apparently that's not going to happen anytime soon. Now, you have to think that if you switched up the countries a little bit, this, I guess, could be seen as a perfectly valid excuse for Spain to now flatten all of Morocco. Why doesn't Spain now try to kill everyone in Morocco? Wouldn't that be the right thing? I mean, last time we saw images of hundreds or thousands of migrants storming over a border, Muslims storming over a border and breaking into a country they don't belong to, that was seen as an excuse to commit abject genocide against the innocent people that didn't cross the border who still live in the country of origin. I don't think that's going to happen this time. I have a feeling that's not going to be the outcome this time, because Israel is allowed to have borders. They are allowed to defend themselves. Europe is not. You're not allowed to. You also have to wonder if this isn't organized as punishment against Spain. Spain, after all, one of the very few European countries who actually did and is standing up to Israel, not allowing their military bases to be used to start the Iran war or anything else. And you had, I should have grabbed it. There's a lot of video recently of Netanyahu sort of basically just making threats against Spain. Because, you know, if you don't bless Israel, then Israel will flood your country with migrants. I think that's how the saying goes. I think that's in Genesis somewhere. I think it says those who bless Israel will be blessed, and those who don't bless Israel will suddenly experience massive rainstorms and a gigantic flood of Muslims from a bunch of NGOs, and you'll suddenly find you're, you know, collapsing under the weight of somebody else's humanitarianism. Really incredible. Of course, not in any way the only instance of this happening. Once again, this is all following the pronouncement by the socialist president of Spain that he'd be basically giving amnesty to anybody who could cross the border, starting off with, you know, a small, modest amount of something like 400,000 people. That, of course, inspiring an influx of upwards of 1 million people who apparently all qualify somehow. Now there's this new influx of hundreds of thousands all at once in a single day, almost as like insult on top of injury, like doing it right in your face when they could do it in a much more subtle and effective way. The demoralization and humiliation is certainly part of it. So you've got the rushing of the Spanish border from Morocco. Obviously, you have the small boats and the dinghies crossing the Mediterranean from Libya continually for the last decade at least, with many NGOs running out of Malta or Italy, where they go and pick up the migrants just off the coast of Tripoli and bring them into the EU and let them loose. And you've got the agreements being made now with European countries to allow hundreds of thousands of Indians to go, you know, shore up their population because the European people have been subjected to a systematic demoralization and bankruptcy campaign, which means they can't afford or physically have children. So they're dying out and being replaced by people without a historical heritage of liberty, rebellion, individuality, but rather are Muslims who take orders from their local imam every Friday, who they have to treat like the actual mouth of God. It's not, you know, these are all drops in the bucket. Meanwhile, more than 750 migrants cross the British Channel, the crossing between Calais and England. In 2026, daily record, most in a single day all year. Britain's government said Thursday 752 migrants were detected arriving in small boats across the channel the previous day, a daily record for this year. The figure, released by the Interior Ministry, broke a previous 2026 record set in June of 710 arrivals in a single day. The issue of tens of thousands of irregular migrants arriving in small boats each year has vexed successive British governments and fueled support for the hard right Reform UK party led by Nigel Farage. You gotta wonder what they mean when they say that. The issue of tens of thousands of irregular migrants, okay, it's one way of putting it, arriving in small boats has vexed successive British governments. Well, what do you mean? What do you mean, vexed? You mean the British governments that literally are planting these people by the thousands in tiny towns all over England? You mean the English government that has set up the intake pipeline to give these people homes and import their families? What do you mean it has vexed them? That's a crazy thing to say. It's like saying I was vexed by the restaurant when my order arrived. You know, it's like, no, it's what you ordered. Why would you be vexed by that? It's what you want. It's what you're doing on purpose. How could you be? You're not vexed by this. That's the wrong word, I guess, is what I'm saying. It's like the candidate was vexed that everybody was voting for him. It's like you have spent years creating this exact situation. If you were vexed by something, you would try to stop it. And in the case of a bunch of literal rubber dinghies full of people that don't know how to swim, that's not a hard problem to solve. I'm here to tell you right now, if you were actually vexed by that, you would do something to stop it. What's vexing them is that the vast, overwhelming majority of the people in the UK don't want them to, they don't want their government to flood them out of existence with a bunch of hostile foreigners. That's what's vexing them. The thing that's vexing them is that the British people, the European people, aren't just quietly submitting to their preordained eradication from the face of the earth. That's very vexing to them. Be much less vexatious if you would just roll over and die and let 10 billion Muslims from Algeria take over everything that your ancestors built. The number of migrants crossing the channel fell by 41% in the first half of 2026 compared to the same period in the previous years, according to Interior Ministry figures. But, you know, at a certain point, like, what are we doing here? I mean, I know this has sort of been the case for a while, but that's kind of the issue, isn't it? This has been the case for a very, very, very long time. Like a very long time. Like, I went to Europe, must have been 2012, 2013, 14, something like that. Even then, I went to Frankfurt, and it was nothing but Muslim people. In Frankfurt, in the middle of downtown Frankfurt, it was hordes, crowds, endless sea of hijabs, and Muslim people literally, like, wearing boards that say, like, read the Quran, and are just, like, yelling at everybody. That was before anybody knew about the migrant crisis. So, God only knows how bad it is now. I mean, that was before it was opened up fully. That was before the Syrian civil war really kicked off and got all those people, you know, flooded in. It was before all of that, and yet already then, you know, major German cities were overwhelmed. So you got to wonder, after a decade of continual daily importation of hundreds of thousands of adult men into these places in Europe, I was about to say, when is enough going to be enough? But I think it might already be past that. Like, could you kick out Muslim? Like, let's just fantasize real quick that the King of England dies, God rest his soul, the new King of England, you know, is crowned, and let's just pretend he is like a based patriot and says, I'm the king now. As king, I want all these Muslims out of my kingdom immediately. You think that would work? You think they'd do it? Do you think the people under him would even follow those orders? If they did, do you think the Muslims would go quietly? If they didn't go quietly, do you think they would physically fight to remain? If they did physically fight to remain, do you think that the European armies would be capable of fighting back and ousting them? I mean, how many stories have we covered about raids on mosques all over Europe where they find massive caches of like 10,000 AK-47s and hundreds of thousands of bullets? I mean, these things are just stashed away all over Europe. It's almost weird because, you know, mosques all over Europe and in America, unlike many places in the Middle East, they're built a lot like fortresses. They have very high walls. They have barbed wire on them. We know that in Europe, a lot of these mosques are treated as weapon caches and ammunition depots. It's almost like, oh, do you think somebody's going to fight you? Did you think that you would need to fight for this at some point? You don't need to. Like, eventually, it's going to be like 20 years from now. They're going to be like, do we still keep these guns? Like, why do we need them? We conquered. We won. We don't even need the guns anymore. They're never even going to have to use them, because Europe is not standing up to the invasion. So, you know, they're going to die out unless somebody does something about it. But you can't do anything about it, because the only country that has national borders is Israel. It's the only one. It's the only one that's allowed.
And a microscopic tag being planted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often there are things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix, graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here, is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Collins saying 21 years ago that, oh yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha ha ha, wonder to put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away, not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more, scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting that at the, you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health, what it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatic when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Welcome back, folks. Talking about the onslaught, the attack, the invasion, the worldwide civil war. I gotta say, So yesterday, so my son is 5 years old, completely obsessed with war. I mean, he doesn't really know what war is, but guns, weapons, like, it's crazy. Obsessed. Completely. He has, like, a little, like, Kentucky rifle, you know, Davy Crockett-style rifle, and he just wants to carry it around everywhere. My wife is like, I don't know if it's good that, like, our five-year-old is so obsessed with guns. I'm like, there's literally nothing we can do. There's nothing we can do. It's like you show him sports, he's not interested. Like, it's just like, oh, guns, weapons, military, this is awesome. We're talking about this, and I'm like, look, I don't necessarily want to foster like an obsession with guns or anything. But when it's an obsession with Daniel Boone, absolutely. When it's an obsession with you know, pioneer history, of course we're going to foster that. But it's like, you know, a lot of the people that we're friends with, like pretty much all the people that we're friends with, like they don't even let their kids have any weapons ever. Like I grew, when I was growing up, there's, you know, that's all you did. Like all you did was you had guns and ran around, you know, playing pretend war every day, all day. That's what you did, which was normal to me. Now it's not quite as normal, and it's seen as, you know, kind of upsetting to other parents. And I have to kind of be like, look, I don't want to black pill too hard. This might be a little bit doomer-ish of me, but I'm completely serious when I say if nothing changes, it's kind of inevitable. Like, there's no small chance that our son's going to have to actually fight in a war during his life. Like, it's almost inevitable. And like, as much as that sucks, look around the world. Look at what's happening. I have to explain, like, you know, right now, as we speak, there are men being thrown into vans in Ukraine to be sent off to die in the front lines, as they're immediately replaced with a shipment of Indians to take over their jobs. That's happening right now in Ukraine. There is no guarantee that that doesn't start happening in Europe. And it seems as though all of the preparations are being laid. Obviously, that's a big story this week of the United States preparing for invoking the draft and hauling people away. And like, obviously, my son's not going to die for Israel overseas. If and when that eventuality manifests, it's gonna be a life or death struggle. It might get pretty dangerous pretty soon. If, like, best case scenario on the current trajectory, by the time my son is my age, what percentage of America will be white people? So my son is going to, by the time he'll be a despised minority in a probably communist hellhole. Once again, we are on the path of Rhodesia. We are on the path of South Africa. Like, this is just happening. It's inevitable. It's demographic. And it's explicit from the people that are doing it. It's like the Mamdanis out there that are just like, we are going to take wealth from white people and give it to non-white people. Okay. At a certain point, that's either going to result in the full-fledged takeover of everything by people who literally despise us because of the lies they've been told, or you're going to have to, like, fight to stop the communists from taking all your stuff. As, like, black-pilling as this is, this is what's happening. Like, this is inevitable. There's no other outcome from the current trajectory. Am I wrong? Like, is there going to be an England in 50 years? Is there going to be a Spain in 50 years? Is there going to be an America in 50 years? If it even exists, is it going to be recognizable at all to the America that we now live in? Of course, the upsetting and annoying thing is how easy it would be to get us back on the right track. I genuinely wish that we didn't have to worry about any of this. The ideal, you know, government structure is just you do not have to worry about it. You don't have to think about it because your government ideally, you know, ostensibly shouldn't be actively involved in your wholesale physical destruction, but they are. But that's all they do, actually. That is their main, primary, and, you know, to a certain degree, exclusive concern is how do they import as many people as possible? How do they give away as many American jobs as possible? How do they offshore as many American companies as possible? How do they replace a population that doesn't want, you know, to see their Bill of Rights, God-given freedoms destroyed? How do you replace them with people who are actually clamoring for that? I don't know how much longer we have. Like, I genuinely don't. And there is something so frustrating about literally every single day, waking up to literally every single Western country being subjected to yet another or a continuation of these plots to demographically overwhelm us and just destroy us. Like, it is genuinely, I'm so confused. I'm so confused at what everybody else is paying attention to and looking at and doing. Like, I go to these places. You go to a nice neighborhood, go to Lakeway in Austin, go to Seaside in Florida, and it's, you know, houses as far as the eye can see, tens of thousands of houses, 99% of them are white. They all are clearly unbelievably wealthy, right? You drive through some of these neighborhoods and it's like the boat in the garage and the, you know, little Kawasaki mule that I know costs $25,000 and gets ridden, you know, once a month. You know, it's like there's so much wealth, there's so much prosperity, there's so much power in this collective population, and it's just like, do none of them care? Does nobody care that all of this is like slated for destruction? It's going to be destroyed. It's all going to be destroyed. And all of the people who could very easily stand up and stop it just aren't. Just don't know it's happening, don't care it's happening, get uncomfortable when it's happening. If you ask them, they kind of like that it's happening, actually. I don't get it. I don't understand why everyone is like this. Certainly seems to be the case, though. Again, not to black pill too hard here. But, like, am I the crazy one sitting here going to, like, the five-year-old son? I'm like, look, I'd rather him be a little bit too aggressive than be yet another video spread on X where he's standing there with his hands in his pockets, surrounded by, like, black dudes twice his age before he, you know, gets his head cracked on the bathroom tile. Like, do we understand the world that we're entering into? Do we know what it's like to be a minority? And, you know, you think about it and it's like a generation back, like our parents grew up in a household where the dad had been to war, had been overseas killing people with a gun and then come back. Like, this idea that we're past war, it's a complete delusion. We are in a very, very brief window of peace that is very unique and sort of unprecedented in world history and is going to end pretty soon. You know? Do you know what I'm saying? Do you see what I'm saying? And it's like, okay, here we are concerned that, like, our kids are being introduced to, you know, maybe they see a violent movie or maybe they, you know, see something they shouldn't see on the news. And it's like, you understand that for all of time, kids grew up with, like, physical combat being a fact of life. People that settled the frontier, it wasn't a matter of playing cowboys and Indians. It was a matter of, if dad doesn't have his gun, the Indians will kill us. They will scalp us and kill us. Or, you know, I mean, every generation basically had a war until ours. But this idea that, like, war is just this thing that it's out there. It's like over there, the guns are and the people shoot. We don't do that here. It's like, oh, not for now, but, like, there's no guarantee that it stays that way. People are operating in an illusion of permanency, you know, an illusion of normalcy, that this situation is going to go on forever while you can look around and see that it is actively being torn down on every front. So again, if we could change the trajectory, I'd love not to have to worry about any of this stuff. You know, if you had a government that was just like, you do you, I'm going to protect the border. It's like, great. That's literally all you need to do. That's it. Just, you know, protect the border, keep other people out. We're fine. You know, I get along with my neighbors. We get along with each other. And everybody sort of knows how to do what they're doing. We don't need the government in there. Yeah, we could stand to be a little bit more like 300. We could stand to be a little bit more like that. And here's the funny thing to me. You know what really blackpilled me? This is the perfect clip to play. This is 100% exactly what I've been thinking about. Because what really blackpilled me was going to see The Odyssey. I went to see The Odyssey. It's so bad, I can't even explain it. Like, it was one of the worst movies I've ever seen. Every part of it was worse than the last. Truly an awful, god-awful piece of trash, worthless, amoral, libtard, nonsense, bullcrap, gray nothingness of a film. It was so bad. And it was one of those things where I was just like, we'd been hearing so much about The Odyssey, and I knew it wasn't going to be good. I knew because of the casting choices, you know, they had different priorities in making the movie than actually making a good story and telling a good movie. But I'd seen so many people praise it and like talk about it, and then you watch it, and it's like, people actually like this? People actually think this was not just good, but something other than absolute hogwash trash? What is wrong with everybody? What is wrong with everyone? So I don't, you know, I could spend, literally I could spend the entire 3 hours of this show on the Odyssey. It was, I mean, y'all, do you want to hear a quote from the Odyssey? I memorized this one. So after Odysseus hears the siren song, and everybody else has their ears closed, they say, what did the siren song sound like? Matt Damon, as Odysseus, says this. He says, it sounds like the thing you want the most, and the thing you want the most is the thing you most can't have, and the thing you most can't have is the thing that you lost. This is one of these, like, you know, Nolan always has these sort of like kind of weird dialogue sections that like don't feel like the rest of the movie, but usually they're like kind of weird. They don't always work, but sometimes they work, right? They're quotes from Nolan movies, and they usually are like one of these types of scenes, like the scene from Batman where, you know, he gives the monologue about some people just want to watch the world burn, you know, and it's like, whoa, that's powerful. And even though it's kind of crazy and it's kind of doesn't fit in the rest of the movie, it like stands out. And this was like one, you could tell it was like, this is one of those lines. This is supposed to be like really profound. The thing you most can't have, the thing you most can't have. Like, I just sat there repeating that in my head going, what? That's not right. I mean, is that right? That's not right, is it? The thing you most can't have? Is that the way those words are supposed to be used? Like, that's the level of dialogue we're talking about here. And the best comparison you could possibly make is between The Odyssey and 300. Because 300 is one of the best films of all time. It nailed it on every front. Because what you see in The Odyssey is you see true Bronze Age morals. You see, like, yeah, this is who these people are. This is what they believe. And so the comparison between like the wife, all the things you want it to be, then all the things you wish you never wished for. It was the delicious itch you go to scratch, but find it's under the skin. You can't reach it. So the delicious itch becomes unbearable. Told you what you most want is what you most can't have. And what you most can't have is what you already had and lost. Oh, wow. I mean, it's like, that's the movie that everybody's saying is the best movie in the world? That's the monologue from the Best Picture winner? I was just like, oh my God, everybody's retarded. I came out of the movie just being like, what is going on here? Because I'll explain, like, in 300... You know, I mean, we talked about it a lot. The wife in 300 is like the greatest character of all time. The scene when, like, they say goodbye and it's like so powerful. Or the scene when they, you know, this scene, when he kicks the guy into the well. What happens right before that, right? He turns to the wife and the wife gives him the little nod, gives him the little chin up, do it, kick him down the well, kick his ass. And when they say goodbye, it's this emotional, it's this, you know, this is the last time we'll see each other. You are going to die. You're going off to die. And I approve. And you have to. And it's worth it. And so I'm in a question, really. Then you watch The Odyssey. The, like, one of the opening scenes, is Penelope, the wife, being like, but why do you have to go? Let's just get in a boat and sail away west. And it's just like, what are you talking about? If this was really the Bronze Age, you know what that type of question, you know what the response is? You get thrown in the ocean. We're going to throw you off a cliff into the sea, lady. You are no longer queen. What the hell are you talking about? Run away. Have you never heard of honor? Like, it's this thing where you've got these liberals who I genuinely think they don't understand, like, what honor is. Like, it's, like, very confusing to them. And so they have to try to, like, put it in a framework that they understand. And it makes it incomprehensible, incoherent, utter nonsense. I'm not going to spend all 3 hours on it. But my God, I could spend the first hour on the moral incoherence, the second hour on just the abject failure to just make an entertaining movie. There's no joy in the entire movie. There is no triumph in the entire movie. There's no emotion in the entire movie. The worst part of the movie was absolutely the casting. It had nothing to do with Helen of Troy being black. Honestly, that was the least offensive casting choice in the entire movie. Like, she's in it for like 2 minutes. You hardly see her. It's just like, it doesn't really matter. He's just like, this is my wife, Helen of Troy. And she's just like, hello. And then that's it. That doesn't bother me. Like, who cares? Who cares? I would have chosen someone different, but it didn't impact the movie or anything. The thing that took you out of it was Odysseus's, like, small little cabal of men were as diverse as your local high school. I mean, it was like you got the black guy, the Indian guy, the whatever, and they're all sitting there going, we are Greeks, but we are Greeks and we live this way. And it was like every time it showed his companions, it just took you out of it because it was just like, this isn't a family. This isn't a group. This isn't a nation of people that are, you know, fighting to get back home. This is a bunch of people from all over the place. I don't know what they have to do with each other. I don't know why they're on the same team. It doesn't make any sense. You know, if it was an all black, if it was a black remake of The Odyssey and they were all black, I wouldn't have had an issue with that. It's the fact that it's just like, so who are these people? All these people are from Ithaca, are they? The Indian guy, he's from Ithaca, is he? It just completely takes you out of it. Calypso, the seductress, the, like, goddess woman, Charlize Theron, who's like 60 years old and looks plastic. She has obvious plastic surgery. How are you supposed to, like, get lost in a film about the Bronze Age when the woman's got her freaking nose tapped up and it's like, what is this? It's so baffling. It was so bad. But it's crazy stuff. The whole thing. Odysseus has like PTSD about winning the Trojan War. And it's just like, these guys didn't have PTSD about winning a war. What the hell are you talking about? Everything you've heard about it from the right wing is absolutely true. It is the boomer fantasy. It is a Vietnam flick about the PTSD of a boomer. But this is what the reason it really just like made me go insane is the incoherence was like the character, like Odysseus is like racked by guilt because he won the Trojan War. Okay. He didn't do anything wrong. He had a glorious triumph. He won the victory. He tricked the bad guys with a brilliant nom de guerre or a ruse de guerre. He's guilty about that. He's guilty about something where he didn't do anything wrong. Meanwhile, there's another scene where I won't spoil it, but he does something just unbelievably stupid for no reason. Even the characters in the movie. I really don't want to spoil it, but I could. He basically, there's a big monster and he just shoots the monster with an arrow. Everybody's escaped. They're getting away. Dude turns around and shoots an arrow at the monster, alerting him, and like his men get killed. Later, the characters in the movie turn to Odysseus and are like, why did you do that? Why did you shoot that arrow, Odysseus? That was stupid. Which it's like, yeah, it was. It's funny that the characters pointed out. And Odysseus defends it. He's like, well, we had to get revenge for those guys. And this is what I mean. It's like you're watching this movie and the whole thing is like this. The characters feel guilty when they didn't do anything wrong and then defend the thing that they did wrong that made no sense and was horrible. And it's like, so it's not like they took the Bronze Age morality and then made it modern. except that I guess modern morality is just nothing. It's just totally unmoored. It's just incomprehensible, completely incoherent, guilty about things they didn't do, not guilty about things they did do. What are we doing? They say Zeus's law. Do you know what they say Zeus's law is in this movie? I don't know why nobody said this before. The whole movie is about this concept of Zeus's law. In ancient cultures, there was a law. You can call it Zeus's law. You call it the law of hospitality. But it was that you're supposed to treat strangers well. If a stranger came to your home and asked for respite, you're supposed to give them food, not necessarily question who they are. And the idea was because it could be a god in disguise. So you don't want to turn away some man that turns out to be Zeus and get all your sheep hit by lightning or something. So that's what the law actually was. But it was reciprocal, you understand. Like in this movie, it's like they're like, oh, Zeus's law means you can't kick out these people. And it's like, you think Zeus's law was that you had to endlessly serve guests, but guests had absolutely no obligations to you. The guests could do whatever the hell they want. The guests can stay as long as they want and lie to you and steal your stuff, and you can never kick them out. What are you talking about? If the host has responsibilities, so does the guest. But it's that type of thing. So that's what the actual law is, that you're supposed to take care of strangers. In this, it was warped and manipulated and changed and totally, again, incoherent. It's like it applies here, but not over here. They said that Zeus's law is treat others as you like to be treated. That's Jesus Christ's law. Do they not know this? Have they never read the Bible? Jesus Christ came up with that. Christopher Nolan is giving an interview where he's like, the Greeks had this idea of treat others as you like to be treated, and that was the foundation of their society, and we don't really have a foundation like that to our society. It's like, what are you talking about? It's so crazy. So it's this weird, like, treat others as you like to be treated, but also, if they abuse you, you just have to take it. And this is where it gets really baffling. The whole thing is like, Odysseus is like racked with guilt because the Trojan horse, Rhus de Geyr, somehow violated Zeus's law because he gave him a gift that, and it's like, that's not a violation of Zeus's law in any way whatsoever. That's warfare. You're allowed to engage in war. The breaking of Zeus's law is the fact that Paris stole Helen from Menelaus while he was a guest of Menelaus. So it's this thing where they take something that is embedded in the story as a reason for going to war in the first place and a sense of honor and all this. It strips it all of that and it tries to reapply it, but in a totally baffling way. And you watch this and you just go, is this the world we live in? It makes no sense. It is not just not entertaining. It wasn't fun. It wasn't beautiful. It didn't look real. It didn't look authentic. There was just nothing. And then you walk out and it's people going, this is the best movie I've ever seen. You're like, we all need to die.
At last, it's here. Bring it into the docking bay. Stack them all in my chambers at once. I now have all the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter shower heads from the Alex Jones store.
There's something about this water I feel kind of funny. Hey, do you want to hang out tonight?
These stormtroopers are not warriors. They are vessels. We keep them full of chemicals to keep them under control. Like the dark side itself, it dulls the mind. It fractures the will.
Drink your water, troopers. I am sending you to the desert planet of Tatooine. We must crush the rebel force.
Dude, I think I'm gay. Me too. Let's go back to the ship and cuddle. I thought you'd never ask.
Turn around now and get back out there. These are your orders.
They're turning the frogs gay. Don't let them turn you next. Ha ha ha. You have to admit that Alex Jones is funny.
AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.